Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Brian, thank you very much. The Conservative MP Gavin Williamson has quit the Cabinet following allegations of bullying just a fortnight after helping Rishi Sunak become British Prime Minister. The former Education Secretary says he'll work to clear his name of any wrongdoings. Well, I'm joined now by Cindy Yu, who's broadcast editor at The Spectator. Good morning, Cindy.
Morning.
So yet another tumultuous day in UK politics ending late last night with that resignation. How do you think that Gavin Williamson's decision to go, which seemed to be warmly welcomed by Rishi Sunak, how will that impact the Prime Minister?
I know, it's rather becoming quite tumultuous as the norm in British politics, isn't it? I think when it comes to Gavin Williamson, it was clear that Downing Street didn't want him to go. There was reports that they were trying to kind of see what halfway compromises there could be, such as putting Gavin Williamson into an anti-bullying training or something like that. You know, in the end, Gavin Williamson decided to go. And actually, I think that was for the best for Downing Street from their perspective, that he willingly left and it wasn't being fired by Rishi Sunak. That's not the mainstream opinion. Most people think that actually Rishi Sunak's in the worst of both worlds because he resisted firing this minister, but now this minister is out on the back benches causing havoc outside the tent anyway. But I actually think, given that Downing Street stood by Gavin Williamson and it was only a few days of scandal, they nipped the scandal, you know, not in the bud, but, you know, relatively early on. And Gavin Williamson now will not be causing havoc on the backbenches, is my personal opinion, because they think he thinks that Downing Street backed him up.
Yeah, but this man who previous prime ministers had to fire as well, bringing him into the cabinet in the first place, there have been lots of questions about Rishi Sunak's judgment on Gavin Williamson, but also Suella Braverman.
Yeah, it's true. There's a view in the party that Gavin Williamson is the person who would, you know, any successful campaign needs him on side because he knows the numbers, he knows what each individual MP thinks, he knows where their weak points are as well. And so Rishi Sunak clearly brought him on during the leadership contest in order to kind of whip that campaign. And that already, actually, I think that possibly lost him the campaign over the summer because there were so many people who dealt with Gavin Williamson who said, actually, I can't support Rishi Sunak because he's got Gavin Williamson on side and they're doing very unpleasant things. So Rishi Sunak has already been burnt once by this. Obviously, when he then did become Prime Minister, I think he did feel like he had to reward Gavin Williamson somehow to avoid that kind of backbench habit causing that the two previous Prime Ministers who fired Gavin Williamson did have. So it's a very, very tough.
Oh, have we lost Cindy's line? Well, maybe as we're trying to get Cindy back.
Sorry,
we'll,
can you hear me now?
Sorry, yeah, the line just dropped there. But you know what I was going to do, actually, was play a clip from Anne Milton, the former MP, who was Gavin Williamson's deputy when he was chief whip. Now, this was at a time, I think, when he kept a tarantula in a glass box on his cage, on his desk. She was speaking on Channel 4 last night. Let's listen to what Anne Milton had to say.
On one occasion, we had an MP who got a few financial problems. Some financial help was given. It wasn't a great amount. But I do remember him asking me to give the MP in question the cheque. And he waved it under my nose and said, make sure when you give him this cheque, he knows that I now own him.
Own him?
Own him. I'm sure if you ask Gavin Williamson about this, he will say it was a joke. I don't think it was a joke.
What made you think it wasn't a joke?
It was the seriousness with which he said it.
Doesn't sound like a very pleasant character, Cindy.
No, he doesn't. I think if anyone's read House of Cards or watched the TV series, I think for someone like Gavin Williamson, there would probably be more of an instruction manual than entertainment. I think that is clearly the way that he saw his role as a whip to kind of know vulnerabilities of the sheep that he is herding, as it were. And clearly so many MPs have horrible stories about this. So I think that was one reason that he just couldn't say, because there was just so much ammunition. It's not just MPs as well, it's also civil servants that he worked with.
Can you give us some examples of this? Because he's been dogged by scandals and controversies since he first took up his first ministerial role in 2017. Take us through some of those issues that have arisen.
from how he treats the party, the problems that he had with the previous prime ministers was basically that he wasn't able to complete his ministerial brief to a competent standard. So under Theresa May, she believed that he had leaked national security information. He denied that always, but she believed that he was the source of the leak. And I mean, we don't know if it would be, you know, what are the truth of that is, but that was at a very tense geopolitical moment for the UK and China. And that's what she believed that he was not helping on. So she sacked him. Then he was brought back under Boris Johnson for similar reasons that Rishi Sunak wanted to enlist the services to kind of whip the party into shape. But under Boris Johnson, during the pandemic, he, as education secretary, simply just couldn't handle the unprecedented challenges for the education secretary at that point when it comes to school lockdowns and then when it comes to grade inflation and this kind of A-level results day confusion. And so during the reshuffle in 20, under Boris Johnson, he was shuffled out again. And so this is his third stint at being in cabinet.
He came up with a scheme when exams had to be cancelled that eventually people discovered that it would favour private schools. That was one of his missteps, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. I mean, to be fair, it was a very extraordinary time, and I think a lot of departments struggled with their respective briefs. But when it comes to children's education, that's the thing that's got the most long-lasting impact. And from people that I've spoken to close to him, I mean, it was clear that that wasn't something he was interested in. It wasn't a brief that he actually wanted. And I think that really came across in, as you suggest, you know, giving suggestions of policies that actually don't, in the end, work. I mean, I think there would be no good solution once schools had been locked down. There would always have been some kind of education backlog. Private schools would always have been favoured. At the same time, you know, you look at someone like Michael Gove and you think maybe he would have done a better job.
Mm-hmm. And then when you look back at the Salisbury poisonings, the Novichok poisonings, didn't he tell the Russians to shut up and just go away, which was hardly a very ministerial response?
No. So there's a theory going around Westminster that actually, instead of something particularly malicious from Gavin Williamson, that he's just actually a bit immature. Okay. You see that in this kind of language. You see that in the really extraordinary language telling people to go, you know, slice their throats or jump out the window. You can kind of see the petulance of the character. And similarly for those texts that he sent to Wendy Morton, the former chief whip, that yeah, actually he's just someone who's just never quite grown up.
And on those most recent allegations, the ones that led to his resignation, he hasn't fully denied them, has he, Cindy?
No, he hasn't. There's been very careful phrasing, I think, in both the statements that he's put out as well as the resignation letter, where he's basically said, nothing's been formally brought to my attention. I dispute the characterisations of these allegations, rather than disputing the allegations themselves. And I think, you know, I think that's quite telling.
Now, just to come back to this question around Suella Braverman, because Gavin Williamson really has taken a lot of the attention over the last week or so. Do you think now that people will start talking again about her reappointment following her sacking under Liz Truss?
So I think it depends on how much Rishi Sunak can grip this small boats issue that the UK is facing. And I think over the last week, the situation has improved. So part of the thing that was adding fuel to the Suella Braverman row was the fact that she clearly wasn't able to get on top of the situations that she was, you know, let alone what she politically might think or whether or not she's a security risk or not. As a Secretary of State, she wasn't gripping the brief. But I think over the last week, the situation has improved. Manston, one of the asylum holding centres, which was more than twice over capacity, has now come down under capacity again in terms of occupants. Rishi Sunak is talking about a deal with the French, and he and Macron met in Egypt on Monday, where, you know, the UK will be sending more money to France in order to tackle people smuggling on that side of the channel. So if the situation kind of dials down in stability, then I think Suella Braverman is safe for now. But I think what's interesting is that behind the Gavin Williamson stuff, behind the Suella Braverman things, I think there are basically people who are disgruntled with Rishi Sunak, who perhaps supported Boris Johnson, supported Liz Truss, who still have, you know, this kind of vendetta almost. So what will they bring out next, basically?
So you're expecting that those people who are on the back benches and who are dissatisfied will keep agitating, and there's plenty of things for them to agitate about.
Well, I think Suella Braverman and Gavin Williamson are the two biggest kind of sore spots that have the widest resonance amongst the party, because neither of those are popular characters, I think we can fairly say. But I think, you know, at some point the party really has to look at itself and say, if we're going to keep agitating, if we're going to keep having a civil war despite changing prime ministers three times in a year, what is going to happen to us at the next election, and is that really what we want? I mean, that unity message, I think, is still really, really important. The Labour Party is still miles ahead in the polls. And so I think, you know, for those agitators, I don't know how much more ammunition they have, but they really have to think twice about what the direct implication of their actions on the next election.
What their ultimate aim is. Cindy, thank you very much for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Cindy Yu, their broadcast editor with The Spectator. And we're just hearing now that Meta Platform Inc.'s Mark Zuckerberg he's going to reduce the size of his worldwide team by about 13%. So that's higher than the 10% that was speculated upon up to this point. And the plan is that they're going to let, this is worldwide now, more than 11,000 employees go. We're going to get more on that from RT's Brian O'Donovan very shortly. Coming up next, though, Harry Barry and Anne-Marie Craven on being a parent to a child with a serious or chronic illness. That's after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.